Welcome to the Maine Reader on Maine Airs, the Maine Audio Information and Reading Service, a program of the IRIS Network serving Maine's blind and visually impaired. My name is Cynthia Bowman, and I'm reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, the diary of Dorothea Bolton Bolano, edited by her son, James W. Bolano. Our last episode took us through quite a few changes in the life of our diarist. She married her captain, Fred Bolano, and they have become a seagoing couple. It sounds as if the couple will become a seagoing family fairly soon. Dorothea has taken us on tours of New England history, both military, Lexington and Concord, and literary, Lexington and Concord. From time to time she wonders about the wisdom of her marriage, but she seems to embrace the adventure of it all, marriage and life at sea. We'll continue reading now. Wednesday, May 31st, 1911. Took the track motor to Ponce. Kent's gave a party for Miss Cudahy, who definitely sails north with them in the Governor Powers. Dinner at the Malia, a heavenly time. Thursday, June 1st, 1911. Back on board the Hopkins, and slept nearly all day. Friday, June 2nd, 1911. Began to load cargo of molasses for Baltimore. Embroidered red the octopus. Saturday, June 3rd. Bark on away, sailed this morning. Feel like hell with everyone going but us. News came this morning that we're chartered to Rio de Janeiro in September, the usual Christmas cargo Fred and his father seem to have a monopoly on each year. Ice packed in sawdust with barrels of apples on top. Sounds delightful. Will I go? I wonder. Ever since I can remember, I've wanted to travel. The years on the farm made it all the more important that I see the big world. Now I have the chance and find myself hesitating just because my big handsome husband likes his fudge a certain way. Isn't that narrow of me? What's a little longer boiling time for a batch of fudge in comparison with the temper that must be made to boil a bit slower? Why can't I be more like my ancestor, Sir Thomas Moulton, who was written up by Walter Scott in The Talisman as being the only one Richard the Lion-hearted could get along with because Thomas countenanced Richard's high spirits with an even temper. I'll try, but it won't be easy. Not on your tintype. Sunday, June 18th, 1911. Haven't ridden in here for 2 solid weeks. Have been concentrating on Fred, his fudge, and his fusses. We cleared the ship for the voyage yesterday and may sail tomorrow. Fred is on shore settling up the stevedoring and harbor bills as well as the ship chandlers. 2 of the Aguirre boys are coming north with us. Spent last evening at Merhoff's and saw good old Dr. Ritter before we left Ponce. Felt better in the cool of the evening after a scandal-lousy hot day. Donna Lola has finished my sewing, and I picked up all my things Fred asked me to send out to have done. Apparently, the fudge has improved. Apparently, the way to Fred's good graces is through his stomach. Read Elbert Hubbard's writing on James J. Hill. He says, Pericles built a city, but Hill built an empire. He has one credential for greatness. He was born in a log cabin. Little do these Easterners understand us from the West and Midwest. When I told Fred that my grandfather built a log cabin in Minnesota for his first few winters with his wife, Fred said, "What a good waste of lumber." Bah! Tuesday, June 20th, 1911. Washed today, just to show Fred that Monday is not sacred as wash day. My next project is to have ice cream on Saturday instead of Sunday, and baked beans the reverse. Will the ship sink? Read some of Keats' Hyperion. Am I losing all my intelligence and ideals in my petty round of detail? I hope not. Isn't it a treat to have the fresh pineapples and mangoes and papayas? Does Fred think the way to my good graces is through my stomach? That thought sounds strangely familiar. Could it be that we are, after all, somewhat alike? Read Woods Hutchinson's article in the Saturday Evening Post about the present high standard of American mothers. He's a medical doctor and claims that they excel all former mothers in health, appearance, companionship, ability, and in the small number of children. It has some good thoughts, and one of them is that the writer is an optimist. However, I think he might have offered a bit of evidence here and there. What does he know about other countries? Does he know that in Latin America marriage is the exception rather than the rule in the lower classes? How could my seamstress, Donna Lola, be healthy, lovely, companionable, able, and the mother of a small family when she has been left by her husband with 10 children to exist on rice cooked in fat under a leaky roof where the one bed is invaded by him whenever he begs or steals enough to buy a bottle of rot-gut rum and breed another baby? Wednesday, June 21st, 1911, at sea. Washed and ironed, tea in the afternoon on deck, read Hubbard's Little Journey on Aristotle and how human the latter appears to be. His boyhood and his friendship with Alexander the Great are emphasized, but very little credit is given to his philosophy. Getting back to Aristotle and away from the phobias of Fred refreshed me, and I feel more cheerful. Thursday, June 22nd, 1911. The Carolina passed across our bow and whistled farewell, 3 blasts, little wind, helped Fred paint the afterhouse a beautiful white, finished some towels I've been edging. I have been morose, wondering as I worked. Would have been better off reading. I wonder if the washing and painting and other work is too much for me. I hope I shall not be sick. I'd love to go to Rio with Fred. I'd hate to have to miss it, having heard and read so much about that glorious city, its diamond necklace, about Botafogo Bay and its Copacabana. Fred said he and his father were offered many acres of that beach, but decided their money would be better invested in Port Clyde real estate. I think that's like refusing to invest in a proven gold mine. Longest day of the year, not only by the nautical almanac, but by my feelings. Only consolation is that it's the shortest night. Friday, June 23rd, 1911. Read Idle Thoughts of an Idle Fellow. Not particularly fitting for my present activities, but it's nice to know that there is someone enjoying idleness and making good use of it, as I once did. Saturday, June 24th, 1911. Glory be, I'm pregnant. If a sick pregnancy is a safe one, as some say, I should have a marvelously healthy child. Feel like hell warmed over. If Fred ever ceases to love me, I shall die a natural death. Hi-ho, nothing can last forever. Hemmed berth curtains, started a linen pillow slip, and made 2 scallops. Wind begins after 3 days of calm, but in June it's rare to get a spanking sou'wester, which is what we need now that the easterly trades have forsaken us. Between the old steward, who looks like Punch and hails from Bremen, Germany, and the Saba Island mate, Simmons, who is half Spanish and half pirate, I have begun a most interesting but quite amateurish study of the Spanish and German influence on English sea terms. Coming from them, it's probably unreliable, but, then again, it may be more authoritative than some of the ivory-towered dictionary explanations. The Spanish words for bow and poop and boom are respectively proa, popa, and pluma. Stern comes from a German, as does deck, ship, schiff, and sail, segel. Starboard is from the Norwegian, steerboard, as marlinspike is from malspike, or so they say. What richness the English language acquired through robbery! And speaking of robbery, Fred tells me that in his grandfather Hupper's time, the Saba Islanders, like the Nevis men, planted false lights to ground out main vessels for a ransom. I didn't tell him the story about my Plymouth colony ancestors importing the notorious pirate Dixie Bull in 1631 from England to smuggle fish and furs from the Penobscot through the French lines to our sacrosanct pilgrims of the Mayflower who prayed for the pirate's success. I found that choice morsel on visiting the Massachusetts Historical Society with Alice Hatch. I shall never tell my mother. Sunday, June 25th, 1911. Fred gave me a dose of sulphur and molasses. We've plenty of the latter. To perk me up this morning while I felt so sick. The result? Felt like death and destruction all day. Death and decay in all about I see. Our two passenger boys are enjoying a lazy trip. Says Wagner, "Oh, yes. We're working hard today. It keeps us busy chasing the shade around the house," says Dirchett. "We only get 10 hours sleep a night," says Fred. "They're like Paddy's hurricane, up one mast and down the other." I envy the boys. Fred frets at not putting them to work, but claims they'd upset paint pots and cause more work. He uses an old seagoing expression to describe them. In everybody's mess, meals, and nobody's watch. Monday, June 26th, 1911. With the rising breeze, so rose my spirits. Feel better when going places, and so told Fred when he asked me about his idea of buying a farm out west. I've had the life of a farm, and I am most willing to leave it to others. I figured out the sights today and am beginning to understand navigation, celestial, that is. Fred hasn't the remotest idea of the theory behind it all, and I do believe that if his tables were lost, we'd sail in circles. I studied his Bowditch, B-O-W-D-I-T-C-H, I pronounce it both ways, apparently, which he calls by the delightful old-fashioned word epitome, and in it there's a most lucid explanation of the astronomical triangle. Applying my university course in spherical trigonometry makes it all easy and most sensible. I do believe that with a bit more study, I might make up our own tables were they lost. Certainly I can now figure the position with the trigonometric formula given in Bowditch, which is black magic to Fred. However, he always gets us where we're bound, I must say. He says he's from the school of dog-barking navigators, and when he's along the coast, can tell where we are by knowing the difference between the baying of Uncle Isaiah's hound from the snippy bark of Mrs. Gardiner's poodle. Of course, I don't believe him, but maybe he's somewhat right in adding what he learned from his father, who never completed grammar school, that some of the best navigating is by guess and by God. They have both been very successful shipmasters, but I side with Nathaniel Bowditch, who sailed his ship through a fog into Salem Harbor after no night sights for 3 days, so sure was he of his earlier celestial navigation, Sila. I wonder how it feels to be a man and love a woman and have her for your wife. Of course, I shall never know, any more than Fred will never know the astronomical triangle, but I shall ask him. He'll probably just grin. Tuesday, June 27th, 1911. Did my housework today and then had a refreshing salt bath in the beautiful copper tub. Found some gray hairs. Made fudge, but not enough for Fred and the two boys. Sails shifted as we changed course slightly westward, now that we're north far enough to no longer fear Cape Hatteras and its treacherous shoals. Mr. Simmons, the mate, differed with Fred about getting too close to Cape Fear. There were tons of looks that passed between the two, but only ounces of words. reminds me of Captain Kent's story about the whaling Starbuck brothers of Nantucket, who had been to sea on one voyage for 3 years, and had become thoroughly uncivil to each other. Captain Starbuck, the older brother, one day, after months of not seeing a whale, congratulated Mr. Starbuck, the mate, on his great good fortune at having harpooned and boarded 3 large whales in one afternoon. "Have a cigar, Mr. Starbuck," said the captain. "No, thank ye, Captain Starbuck," said the mate. "I don't want none of your cigars," the captain said. "Then have a noggin of fine Barbados rum, Mr. Starbuck." The mate said, "No, thank ye, Captain Starbuck. I don't want none of your long black Havana cigars, nor none of your noggins of rum. All I want from ye, Captain Starbuck, is a little civility, and goddamned little of that." Wednesday, June 28th, 1911. Not with eye service as men-pleasers, but as servants of Jesus Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. In other words, I had a long, hard night and feel like hell, and... Thursday, June 29th, 1911. To take my mind off holy matrimony and unholy sea captains, varnished our cabin deck and finished the embroidery. "The current flows the way the wind blows," says Mr. Simmons. That, in answer to my question about the Gulf Stream starting to veer northeast about here, off the Carolinas. Not believing him, I went to Bowditch on tides and currents. The equatorial current from Africa does flow with the easterly trades. Then the stream flows north along the American continent with the prevailing southwest winds until the westerlies start pushing it northeast off the Jersey coast, and later easterly to Iceland and England, even to Norway, where it warms the waters and provides the fish with tropical food. He's not far from right, although I doubt whether he reads any more than does my Fred. Speaking of tropical food, we still have some delicious pineapples and mangoes. Yum! Friday, June 30th, 1911. Made chocolate, and did it ever taste good? A miserable night with nausea and pains. Washed and varnished the little after-galley entirely, to put the old steward to shame. He's full of German philosophy and can tell you all about how the Kaiser will chase the English from the seas, but he's dirty, sloppy, and lazy. Came to me with tablecloths that were brown, although they had been washed. He said he had to save water, so they was soaked and washed and rinsed in Von Wasser. Read The Fall Guy by Brand Whitlock from an old post. Very good yarn. Had to get my mind above this ship because Fred had been talking about Mamie MacPhail. She must have been as low in mind and politeness as his others, for all the girls for whom he did so much, giving presents, etc., not one gave us a wedding present. Isn't it strange that even Betty did not either, after all Fred has done for her? Of course, I am selfish, even to think of this. Sunday, July 2nd, 1911. Fred heaved his old shoes overboard to bring wind. A sacrifice to Neptune? It's a tradition going back, I know, and I must spend some time in re-studying ancient history to see what I can find out about Greek and Roman seamen making their sacrifices to get a fair wind. Isn't it enchanting? Calm, calmer, calmest. Shall we ever arrive off the Chesapeake for Baltimore? I doubt it. Patience, my girl. Monday, July 3rd, 1911. A little wind. Thanks to the shoes? We are slowly approaching Cape Henry. Apropos of my being a crew member, the joke Fred likes best is the one about the colored gentleman before the judge who asked, "Have you any occupation?" "Yes, sir." "What is it?" "I's the proprietor of a laundry." "You are?" "What's its name?" "Eliza Ann." "I wonder if Eliza Ann received any wages." "I don't." But now my dear, sweet, handsome husband with the most beautiful nose says I'm to be part owner of the Hopkins. He's getting me a few 64ths when we arrive. I'll have the dividends for pin money, he says. Pin money be damned, I'll see an opera or two. Or should I say, hear an opera? Tuesday, July 4th, 1911. Towed up the bay with the Governor Powers alongside. Riverview Park in the afternoon. Iced drinks for a change. Succulent seafood and a small despedida party to the young men from Aguirre. Wednesday, July 5th, 1911. Letters. My poor dear sister Nettie, her engagement broken, and she is very tired and sat at home with Mama for a while. A good letter from Betty. Guess her heart is not broken after all. Saw Captain Kent at agent's office. Thursday, July 6th, 1911. Shopped with Fred. Got an ice box for the vessel. Selected a hat and the darlingest pair of blue slippers you ever saw. Fred brought me the daintiest sweet peas and a bunch of yellow coreopsis and some pretty red and white sweet williams. Mrs. Kent came on board in the afternoon and we visited. She is a veteran at sea and sea captains. She said to stand firm and I'd be surprised how they give in. Fred is sick and we had to cancel our dinner on board the Governor Powers. I fed Fred ice cream and cold milk, but Captain Kent said he would call a doctor. There came a Dr. Fisk, who did what all doctors do. Prescribed rest and a light diet. To bed went Fred, with demands for food every hour. No light diet for him. Monday, July 10th, 1911. Fred finally better after a long recuperation. Came old friend Linda Deaton, she of Utuado, 7th grade fame, who passed on to me, in the 8th grade, those, only those, who could take it. We spent the night on board, and she so loved our cabin that she is having her parents fix up a room, like our cabin, full of rest and sleep, she says. Wednesday, July 12th. I complain about feeling ill, but when Fred gets really sick, he says nothing. Wasn't Captain Kent a godsend? He told me Fred must be watched for his stinginess. Imagine a downeaster saying that! But then it takes one to know one. He sailed as mate with Fred's father, Captain J.W., of the Mabel Jordan, and now the Margaret Thomas, and he tells about Fred as a boy on board. He had a little red tricycle, which his father let him ride, even in rough weather, along the deck. Fred's mother sailed with her husband for over 10 years, and then said, "I've served my time, and I'm going down home because my home suits me fine." The next trip she wrote her husband that he must have planned the plumbing in their new big house when he was in Rio de Janeiro, because the water pipes froze by early December. Captain Kent said she was in Maine, even when she was in Rio, refusing strawberries in December because they were out of season. Once, when her husband was too sick to handle the ship and the mate couldn't navigate, she brought the Mabel Jordan home to Thomaston from Martinique all by herself. She surely did serve her time. Linda and I to Monument Square, and I fairly worshipped the serene grace of the fountains and terraces before partaking of a delicious ice cream soda and buying a melon to take home to Fred. We hope to have Fred's cousin, Roscoe Hupper, Bowden and aide to Senator Hale, and now studying law in Washington, over for Sunday dinner. Thursday, July 13th, 1911, Washington and Mount Vernon. Say nothing of the former to me, too much like Minnesota, but of the latter, sing me a canto. The pleasant boat ride down the Potomac is a good beginning. You land and climb to meet the tomb, peaceful and ivy-grown, then the barn of 1733, and the old unpainted family coach, the old kitchen full of pewter and plate, the fireplace and the 18 rooms, the exquisite parlor and tasteful bedrooms and small outbuildings nearby for washing, smoking hams, blacksmithing, etc. A most pleasing preservation of the old plantation days. In the West we admire Jefferson because he expanded our country so greatly, but the Down Easters still blame him for ruining their shipping commerce with Jefferson's War. Friday, July 14th, 1911. Tired and feverish after a late arrival home on board last night. Fred never took any medicine the entire time I was away. He believes only in salts, castor oil and sulfur and molasses, and would probably take one of them for a broken leg. He was feeling mean, and with the crew all paid off, I am the only one about for him to spite. I got some small relief from throwing overboard the little glass paperweight I brought him from Mount Vernon. He swore about it, and I never knew a paperweight could justify so many reasons for non-existence. It would slide at sea, it was useless, it was a waste of money, it commemorated the bastard who caused his great-grandfather's ships to rot. Maybe he had been drinking. Although I've never seen him touch anything but wine, he believes in rum, as do most seamen, as a medicine. Then I discovered that he was thinking me selfish for leaving him alone, which just about broke my heart. Was I? Hope I'll feel better later on. But what a way to show his love, deprecating the poor little paperweight instead of simply saying that he missed me. However, I now recollect that his highest compliment, like other Down East captains I've met, when thrilled with a choice course at the table, was merely to say to the steward, "It ain't bad." They're afraid a compliment may generate familiarity, or laxity, or a demand for more pay. Is that a way to treat a wife, even though she's a member of the crew? I shall have to remember the psychology of that for the day when I have to command the ship myself, like Mother B did. That's all we have time for in this edition of The Maine Reader. We're reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, The Diary of Dorothea Moulton Bolano, edited by her son, James W. Bolano. I'm Cynthia Bowman. Thank you for listening.